Hey everybody, welcome to Project 44, the February 4th edition, where we're taking a look at Numbers chapter 3, 7, and 8 today. And in this passage, we see a few very important things. One of them is the important choice of the tribe of Levi. Of all the 12 tribes, Levi is set aside, the entire tribe, to be able to serve God for the entirety of their existence. I mean, this was a generations and centuries kind of a decision. This was a very important decision, because from this point forward, when all of the people get an inheritance, well, Levi, their tribe, does not get a set of land for an inheritance. They are set aside to serve before the Lord in the temple for every generation from that point forward. But I've always wondered this question, why the tribe of Levi? I mean, was it just because they had such good genes? No. Well, actually, it wasn't that. It was for a couple of other reasons. Three reasons have been postulated. One is that Levi was the smallest of all of the tribes, and so it would have been the most likely to be able to be supported by the rest of the tribe's income. A second idea was that these were the ones who demonstrated full loyalty to God by punishing the golden calf worshippers. And the third reason that Levi may have been chosen is because this was Moses and Aaron's tribe, and they were the ones doing the choosing, so you may as well choose your own tribe, huh? Actually, the truth is that God had already chosen Moses and Aaron, and so why not just make it complete by allowing them to have their entire tribe be the ones who would be the tribes that they would be serving before the Lord forever? All right, chapter 7 is the longest chapter in the Pentateuch. A little bit of trivia for those of you who are Bible buffs. And without question, it is the most repetitive. Now, I think we need to ask a pretty simple question here. Why would the Lord want Moses to repeat the six verses word for word, with the exception of the name and the tribe, for 12 different tribes, 12 times? Now, I can't be dogmatic about this, but perhaps my suggestion of an abbreviated version of the gift list would have one major disadvantage. My way of lumping all the gifts together by giving a summary of, let's say, hey, all 12 tribes brought these six items, well, it would have the tendency of de-emphasizing the value and significance of each man's gift. And that's something that God will never do. It makes the chapter a great deal longer, and to be honest, a lot more boring, but it emphasizes a very important fact. God takes special notice of every single thing that you do for him and everything that you give him. This is something that we see throughout the Bible. The gifts, whether they're unique or identical, are duly noted and recorded. Now, the Bible says that God keeps an accurate and detailed record of everything we do for him and everything that we give to him. Now, don't get me wrong. Christianity is a religion of grace. You cannot earn your salvation by giving God gifts or doing things for him, but you do earn rewards in heaven by the things that you do. Jesus was very clear about this. So the gifts that you bring to him in this life, they count for all eternity. Whatever you give him, whatever you do for him, it counts. It matters for all eternity. Now, God doesn't need our gifts. I mean, come on, what could you bring God that he needs from you? But God does love a cheerful giver. You need to give gifts more than God needs to receive them. And God knows that your heart is molded by the gifts that you bring. And so he encourages you to bring gifts to him. Now, this account also underscores the fact that each tribe bringing their gift is acknowledging the importance of worship in their lives. Worship in Israel is the central thing, more important than anything else. It had the center place. The worship of God was that thing around which all of the rest of their lives revolved. It was very important. Now, you may wonder why the order of the tribes. Well, the order in which the tribes appear to give their gifts corresponds to the marching order of the nation when the cloud moved and the camp was broken. Now, it's no accident that the chapter ends with Moses talking to God in the tent of meeting. That name, by the way, has now been applied to the tabernacle. The presence of the Lord was between the cherubim and above the mercy seat. Remember this, because this is the place that the nation of Israel will consider to be the resting place of God for the rest of their history, at least until the temple is destroyed. Israel worshipped God in a manner that pleased him, and he fellowshipped with them. That is the pattern. So before I let you go today, let me ask you a couple of questions. First of all, what's your pattern of worship? Is it a priority for you like it was for the people of Israel? Are you meeting with God personally, vibrantly, regularly to give him praise? Are you participating in corporate worship, most likely a church service, every single week on the Sabbath day that he set aside for rest? Your soul needs it, and your well-being hangs in the balance. The other question is about your giving patterns. Are you giving generously and joyfully and sacrificially, the way that Jesus taught and the way that there is an example in this passage? It's not so much that God needs your money, as he knows that you need to become a giver in order to experience the full life of Jesus. Think on that a little bit today. This has been Mark Ashton and Haven Ashton, giving you Project 4-4 and reminding you that God does not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of God. That's why we're reading every word, studying it, learning the scholarship around it, and maybe having a little bit of fun with it. May God bless you today. All right, sweetie.